have hashtags on them that are easily photoshoppable. There's one with Alex Ovechkin that I just tweeted out before the show that I imagine will be butchered by Penguins fans. Also, the National Hockey League has named a new head of the Department of Player Safety, which we knew would happen before the preseason starts, and we'll talk about Stefan Quintal a little bit later in the program. But also, what is the harbinger of hockey season? What is the thing that happens that puts us all in the mindset that, yes, indeed, it is another season of the National Hockey League upon us? It is, of course, the release of a new EA Sports video game. NHL 15 comes out today. I've seen some of the reviews. I would say the word is tepid. I would say that there are some people that believe a lot of the bells and whistles they liked from previous editions did not make this cut, and that there hasn't been enough super cool innovation. I saw that all the crowd stuff has been enhanced, which is kind of cool. Obviously, the EA Sports got a little bit of hot water with some Instagram photos that they doctored up for the game, in which all of the women that attend games are evidently idiots that don't know what offside is. So that was a problem. But the rest of the graphics, when it came to the fan experience, looked pretty good. So I can't wait to crack open NHL 15 and check it out when I get a chance to. It did get me thinking about old school video games today a little bit when it comes to hockey and gaming. I am, as you know, a man who is not yet at 40, but rapidly approaching, which means that I have an extensive knowledge of all things hockey video games, harkening back to the Activision game for the Atari 2600. Do you remember this game? This was a 2-on-2 hockey game with two open nets. It was almost like a game of shinny, where one of your guys had to go in to defend the net, and the other guy attacked. You both played defense, whatever. Excruciatingly slow gameplay. It was like watching two people running through the mud, chasing a piece of charcoal. But it was the best thing we had at that time when it came to hockey. So we made do for it. Listen, if you could suspend disbelief when playing the game Adventure, that a little dot was actually a brave warrior with a sword, you sure as hell could suspend disbelief and make pretend that it was a fast-paced facsimile of hockey. Then came the NES, which of course meant a leap into the next generation of games and the next generation of hockey games. And what's amazing about ice hockey and Blades of Steel is that to this day, you will have people swearing that there has not been another video game that comes close to the fun game playing experience of either of these games. Now, a lot of that's nostalgic bullshit, because I think some NHL games that have come down the pike since then trump them. But then again, people still do the same stuff about NHL 94. But Blades of Steel and ice hockey definitely had their virtues. I still own both games. I have played both games probably within the last 3 months, I'd say. It was summer. There probably was beer involved. Each of those games had their virtues and their drawbacks. And here's the thing. There are many times in life when you have your Beatles versus Stones arguments. We've had them here on this very podcast between myself and Merrick, where I'm a Stones guy and he's a Beatles guy. And the Stones people all recognize that although our band was technically efficient and, you know, amazing musicians, Charlie Watts versus Ringo Starr, come on now, there was a certain je ne sais quoi about the Beatles. There was a certain amount of magic involved in that band that the Stones probably could never match. And I think that is your quintessential Blades of Steel versus ice hockey argument. Blades of Steel was a game attempting to look like actual hockey. It had the fights, which were a ton of fun. It had the little arrow that went back and forth on the net so you could actually attempt to aim your shot. But what was the point of that? Because the moment you got within 2 feet of that net, you're just going to pass it anyway to fool the goalie, because the AI on the goalie was terrible. It actually had attempts to create cities with teams in them, although none of the colors really matched up all that well outside of New York. memory serves. And you did all of this in an attempt to actually create a hockey video game that was somewhat realistic. Then on the other side of the ledger, you had ice hockey, which was magic, which was not realism. But the fun factor in ice hockey so far outstripped the fun factor in Blades of Steel. It's almost ridiculous to compare the two. It is nearly an apples and oranges debate, even though both games are based in the world of hockey. Four words, ladies and gentlemen, four words to bring you back all the way to the NES and ice hockey. Skinny, medium, fat, fat. Years later, we would create our own players in NHL on EA Sports, give them different attributes, make them faster, make them stronger, make their shots better, give them more aggression. Years after that, we'd be able to create a player and literally follow him through his entire career in be a pro mode. But the earliest customization when it came to hockey video games was the ability to take your four players in ice hockey, your four skaters, because obviously the goalie was not customizable, to take your four skaters in Nintendo ice hockey and determine whether they were going to be a Gretzky. That's the skinny guy. Medium, that's your sort of jack of all trades. You know, faster than fat. Could get a little truculent here and there. Sort of your, your mid-range guy. Not your power forward. But also not your little mighty might. Not your little Mike Ribeiro getting knocked on his ass every 2 seconds. And then you had fat. Lowering the boom. No, they could not get up and down the ice. Yes, they would lose a foot race to Dustin Byfuglien on every occasion. But the shot. Was there any better feeling in Nintendo ice hockey than holding down the button and having him crank back and waiting and waiting and waiting and then unleashing hell on the Polish goalie? Skinny, medium, fat, fat, ladies and gentlemen, was the key to success. I'm sure there are others that will argue that there are other combinations in Nintendo ice hockey through which you are going to be more successful in a head-to-head matchup. I say bring it. I say bring it on. If you want to come at me, bro, with two skinnies, a medium, and a fat, by all means, I will steamroll you. The ice will be littered with your flattened carcasses, with my skinny, medium, fat, fat. The other cool thing about both of these games was the fact that they recognized the necessity for between periods entertainment. In Nintendo ice hockey, of course, it was little men in Jason Voorhees masks with goofy music playing as they clean the ice. Blades of Steel did that one better and gave you little games within games. You could play a round of Galaga between periods of Blades of Steel. Both of these games were awesome. Both of these games made up a huge chunk of my childhood. And then when I graduated to the EA Sports games, it went from being just kind of like silently sitting in the basement, and of course it was in the basement, wood paneled no less, and playing these games, to actually then kind of flexing your wings and creating a world around the game. That was the difference, really. I mean, once we got to the NHL EA games, 93, 94, now all of a sudden you are creating a world around these games, and it's becoming more of an interactive experience. You're not simply playing the game, you're immersing yourself in the game. And that was the real innovation. I certainly didn't sit there in my basement and do play-by-play of Nintendo ice hockey or Blades of Steel, but I sure as shit did play-by-play while I was playing NHL 94 or 95 until 3 in the morning. There are very few moments in life, ladies and gentlemen, that you look back on and say, although this was simply one of the most unhealthy times of my life, it was also the happiest time of my life. And summer nights, working at Burger King, closing the doors, getting out of there at 1 o'clock, going to 7-Eleven and getting a giant Mountain Dew Big Gulp to go along with the double Whopper with bacon that I have constructed from the leftover burgers at Burger King, and then coming home and playing an NHL game until 3:30 in the morning, 4 in the morning, because it was the summer. you could sleep until 1 o'clock the next day. I often wonder what heaven's like. They say we all make our own heaven, ladies and gentlemen, when we get there. I wonder if that might be mine. Happy NHL 15 day, ladies and gentlemen. The Royal Half, one of my favorite bloggers in the world, making his NVSW debut in a second. Tracy Myers from CSN Chicago coming on later on to talk about the Blackhawks and other subjects. And with that, producer Matt, let's start the show proper, shall we? We start the Greg Wyshynski show proper, shall we?
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Well, again, listen, you're one of my favorite guests. I appreciate you coming on the program.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Dude, I know. Listen, I wish I could spend like a full hour or more on the podcast.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
No idea if the stream is working. Hopefully it is. But obviously, it's me rolling solo today. Merrick and me will reconvene on Friday, the day before, 2 days before my big move. Did I mention the moving to New York? Leaving the comfy confines of Alexandria and Virginia behind. I've lived in the D.C. area for 19 years when you factor in my time at the University of Maryland. So I'm heading up to NYC, be working out of the Yahoo Manhattan office as I have been on and off for the last year and a half. And generally, you know, big life change. Been down here for a long time. New teams to cover. Covered the Capitals on a consistent basis for the last 10 years. So yeah, back down here a bit, you know, covering games. Obviously, Winter Classic will be back down here, so I don't feel like it's like the huge goodbye to the area or whatever. But I do, I'm excited. I'm excited to go to New York. Got a lot of friends up there. Got someone I love up there. A little closer to the family and stuff. And so that'll be happening. So when next we speak next week, I'll be a rough and tumble New Yorker. And but on Friday, Merrick and I will reconvene for a new show. Joining us down the line, one of my favorite people in the world, and a guy who has never been on the show before, but I've heard him. I didn't even know you did radio, dude, until I realized that you hit SiriusXM all the time, right, on their NHL channel. Is that right?
Yeah, you're late to the trend. I'm on the War Room with Mick Kern kind of often. I used to be his LA Kings disaster correspondent, and now I'm his LA Kings successful correspondent.
Well, I mean, you don't have to put over other radio shows while you're on. I mean, it's kind of like, you know. I'll tell you what. I don't think I talked about this in the show. I was trying to come up with a comparison to what you just did. And real briefly, because I think you'll appreciate this. So because I am moving, people are coming to my house, not my house, my apartment, to see it and to see if they're going to rent it early before I leave for New York so I don't have to pay the full month. And so this family comes in, right? And this dude and his wife and their little boy. And their little boy is precocious, and immediately he goes for my daughter's toys, which is fine. I mean, okay, fine. You're here. You're looking at the place. It's going to be a few minutes, whatever. That's okay. He makes a bit of a mess, but it's okay. The dude comes over, and he's looking around the place. They're commenting on it, whatever. And he's like, hey, by the way, do you mind if I use your bathroom? I'm like, sure, that's fine. And so it becomes 1 minute, and then it becomes 2 minutes, then it becomes 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden you realize that your concept of may I use your bathroom may have been a little bit different than his concept of may I use your bathroom. Now, I'm not going to judge. Maybe there was some funky stomach stuff going on. Maybe it was an emergency. It's not as if I live in an area where, you know, you can readily go and just pop into a McDonald's next door or something. But it was one of those moments where I was sitting in my chair and he walked out of the bathroom and we made eye contact and he just kept walking. Didn't say anything.
Are you saying I crapped all over your show at the start? Is that what this analogy is?
So anyway, the LA Kings. no, I'm so happy that you're on the show. I love you know, I'm a huge fan. If you have not, if you don't read the Royal Half, I know what the hell your problem is, because this is a blog that was an amazingly inventive and funny blog that then was embraced by the LA Kings. Right? How did that whole thing come about?
It's pretty crazy. After the Kings hired this guy, Dwayne Hankins, who's since left to go run digital media for the Portland Trail Blazers, and Pat Donahue, who's taken over for him, he of the infamous, you know, you're welcome, everyone outside of BC tweet, they were fans of the blog. And after the Kings won the Stanley Cup, they came to me and they said, hey, we want you to do what you do on your blog, like the game days and whatnot, and do that on LAKings.com. And then the lockout happened, so it got delayed. And literally the day the lockout was ended, they called me and said, all right, let's do this. And so I did game days for the lockout season. And then last year I got a press box access and I sat next to Pat for almost every home game and did all the game days. And now we have not to rival another, podcast, but we have a Kings podcast called All the Kings Men that is now also being featured on LAKings.com as well. So we're catching up to the Merrick Wyshynski empire, moment by moment.
Moment by moment, exactly. Were you ever concerned about content? Were you ever concerned that these guys were going to all of a sudden, that there would be any friction? Because I only ask because one, you're not, it's not like you're the Pens blog. I mean, it's not like you're pushing the envelope all that far. But, you know, in the past, there have been sort of these questions about the Kings and sort of independent content that they bought on board, and specifically thinking about Rich Hambin, specifically thinking about having their own internal beat writer, and you know whether they're allowed to be as candid as they might be, where they if they were covering the team for another paper. Did you ever have any concerns or questions about the content you have, and whether or not they'd kind of crack down on it?
Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that the Kings stressed to me when I started was like, let's figure out what that line is. Like, there were definitely some very clear things from the start that I don't feel comfortable repeating on your air, like what we couldn't do. But there was a very kind of like, hey, let's kind of see what happens. And that's kind of, you know, everyone thinks that there's like a master plan for all these NHL teams and the Twitter accounts and everything. And it's just kind of like you can either like play it super safe, or you can try to be out there. You can try to have a personality. And then when people react to it, then you can kind of pull back and adjust. And so I've definitely like found myself, I don't think censoring is a good word, but there's definitely been like, okay, I don't feel like this is something that could be on the pages of LAKings.com.
Right.
And if I love something and I don't feel like it could be on LAKings.com, they're cool with me putting it on theworldhalf.com. And so if I need to get that outlet out, I can still do it. But it's kind of like feeling the line out. Like when Daryl Sutter came to the Kings, and we kind of discovered within the first few weeks that he makes amazing faces. I sent an email being like, hey, like, can I talk about Daryl Sutter's face? You know, and like, there was a whole kind of discussion about like, yes, but like, let's keep it pointed to this or that. And lo and behold, that 2013 season, I had the top 10 Daryl Sutter faces of the first 2 months of the season, you know, posts on LAKings.com. So we kind of figure it out as we go along is the short answer.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And, you know, to that end, I always, one of the greatest things about hockey blogging and thinking about how it's kind of grown within the last decade, and I think you could kind of mark the lockout 1.0 as the beginning of the real blogging revolution. I think one of the great things is that there are markets where blogs sort of rose to prominence, where a lot of people sort of grokked to the blog and went to the blog and used the blog in some cases as an entry point to the team. And you know, the Royal Half has been adept at creating a lot of sort of memes around the Kings, whether it's the Daryl Sutter face stuff, whether it's the nostalgia for the Burger King jerseys and things like that. Do you feel like your blog and what you do has become an entry point for some fans that maybe have just gotten into the Kings in the last few years since they've been successful?
Yeah, and actually that was always my intention. Like, I'm a Gretzky baby. Like, I knew there was a professional team in Los Angeles growing up.
Hold on. If you're a Gretzky baby, then I must look at your Instagram, because I've seen the Instagrams of other Gretzky babies, and frankly, quite titillating.
It's much more scandalous than any Gretzky child. So when he came in 88, I went full throttle. Like, I bought in unbelievable, because Kings games in the late 80s, early 90s with Gretzky were just, I mean, I know Hollywood and LA gets like, you know, we get a bad rap for being a scene, but it was a scene. I mean, you had Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts, John Candy, like walking around the forum, in Inglewood. And it just was such an amazing scene. And so in 2001, I finally had reached a point in my life where I could afford half season seats, not full season seats, half season seats. And my buddy and I got our seats in 2001. The Kings had come off like They beat Detroit in that one series. They were the underdogs, and they had made the playoffs like three seasons in a row. And so we're like, all right, look, we're getting in on season seats at the right time. And then they didn't make the playoffs for 8 years. and I thought it was my fault because they made the playoffs when I wasn't a season seat holder.
Oh, of course,
yeah. Holder.
Yeah, totally.
But I got into blogs, and like I used to read, you know, you guys at the Fan House, and in terms of King's blogs, there really was just Battle of California, mm-hmm. That had the great Rudy Kelly writing for it for the Kings. So I followed. That's the thing in LA at the time. I started the blog in 2008. There was very little media coverage of the Kings, and so right. You had to go to the blog to find anything, and it wasn't anything like it is now. And I knew that I didn't want to be a journalist. I knew that I didn't want to do like recaps of the games. Like I wanted to do like what's the Daily Show equivalent of hockey blogging. And so that's the kind of direction I went. So yeah, I do think kind of people, because we do Photoshops and memes and GIFs now are like a huge part of what we do. I do think it's easier for newer fans to get on board with the Kings. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for it. I know there's a lot of backlash about the bandwagon and did anyone in LA watch hockey pre-2012. And my philosophy on bandwagoning, it means your team's good. Right? Like, no one
right.
complains about being a bandwagon of the Sabres or bandwagon of the Panthers. Like, if your team is good, you have bandwagon fans. And so I just want my team to be good so, like, everyone can hop on board.
And to that end, what is it like being an LA Kings fan now? So two cups in 3 years. I guess the first question would be with regard to that experience, does the regular season even matter to you anymore?
It, you know, it used to be, and the NHL is going way overboard with this whole, is it October yet? Now, as a Kings fan, it's like, is it mid-April yet? Like, that's what I'm going to start, like hashtagging.
Like they literally don't have to give a shit. Like, Dustin Brown said that to me after they won the cup, you know, from the 8th seed, where they're like, well, yeah, you know, we kind of are confident that if we just get to the playoffs, we know what we could do there. But now it's not only... We don't even have to worry about the regular season. It's now we don't have to worry about the regular season and the first three games of the first round series. Like, it's preposterous now.
Yeah, maybe instead of is it mid-April yet, it should be are the Sharks up 3-0 yet?
Right.
I think you're right. And the other thing that has kind of fallen into this, and I really feel like Daryl Sutter is as smart of a hockey guy, I think, as they're out there. The Kings don't even want to finish first in their division anymore. Because then they might, like, especially this coming season, like, the Dallas Stars might be the wild card team again, and that could be a good team.
Right.
The Kings know that they can beat some combination of the Sharks and the Ducks, so they want to finish in second or third. They don't want to play outside their division for the first round. I mean, unless it's the Blues, let's be honest. They'd love to face the Blues. But mm-hmm. even with the new-look Blues this year, so it's a weird, as a fan... Look, for years you were just praying that they got the 8th seed, right? Like, you were
right.
just like, please, let them make the playoffs. And now you're like, you kind of want them to hit the 2nd or 3rd seed to get that better playoff matchup.
So does this cup feel different than the first one, I imagine? So I myself, like, you know, in other cup years, I spent a lot of time seeing where the cup is going and blogging about the goofy things that went the cup. I don't know what it is about this Kings Cup tour this summer, but it doesn't seem like there's been a lot of crazy Chris Draper's kid shat in the cup stories. It seems like it's been very pedestrian. Is that because it's sort of the same team that won 2 years ago that won this time?
Well, obviously you haven't seen two photos. One of Robin Regier in a Ferrari with a Stanley Cup, and the other of Martin Jones with a Falconer's glove and an owl on his wrist as he stands next to
I did not see that one.
But no, I think you're right, actually. There's a producer for Fox Sports named Jack A. Wilson who covers the Kings and goes out on the tour with a cup. And we had him on a podcast, and I know LA Kings insiders talked with him. And he did say, especially for the second-timers, it was a lot more of an intimate affair. Like in 2012, it was big, huge, you know, public parties and getting as many people to see the cup as possible. And for the second-timers, it was much more intimate. And then you had the first-timers, like a Robin Regier, who, you know, this is probably, if the Kings don't win the cup again this year, his last time to really have a chance to win the cup. So he
right.
made the most out of it. You had Slava Voynov took the Stanley Cup into a Russian Lamborghini dealership and chose between a red and a silver Lamborghini and chose the silver because it matched the cup better. So there's still some personality with it, but yeah, you're right. I think in general, it's funny as the day with the cup has gotten much more popular and has become a thing, especially with photos being tweeted out. I think those stories of the kids shitting in the cup or ending up in the bottom of Lemieux's pool or whatever, I think those are getting a little bit less and less because of the access that people have now.
Yeah, it needs to morph back. It needs to kind of morph into the Instagram-y. You know what it needs to do? We need to take the coverage of Patrick Kane's bar crawls and apply them to the cup, because that's really – like, it's amazing to me that most of the cup coverage is of the – here are the official photos. Here's Johnny going back to his old gymnasium and signing autographs for his youth team. And we never get the, here's player X at 3 a.m. walking out of a strip club with the cup in his hands kind of thing. It's like, we don't get that for some reason. And I'm not quite sure why, because it's not as if other facets of their lives haven't been, you know, put on film and put on Instagram and put everywhere else.
What you kind of get on that, though, I will say, is the night they win the cup, especially in 2012.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They would pop up in a club in the South Bay, and they'd pop up in Hollywood, and then they'd be, you know, somewhere else. And so that was, especially in 2012. And then they ended up in Vegas, and there's that great shot of all of them, like, partying in the pools in Vegas.
That was awesome.
Like, that was fun, like, to literally be tracking the cup on Twitter the night after. So I think that's the closest we're going to have to those great stories.
Well, I've often said that the greatest Stanley Cup final that I've ever seen is the Vancouver-Boston one for various reasons. I mean, from a narrative perspective and a big moments perspective and a drama perspective, I mean, it was like a Hollywood script. But you remind me that even after Game 7 and even after the riots, we had the Bruins at the bar with the, you know, the gross national product of Venezuela as their bar tab.
The guy
who ordered the Amstel Light. So you're right. It's the immediately post cup party now is our last glimpse into that world before things get on lockdown throughout the summer. Before I let you go, you know, the Kings are adept at many things, and we're very jealous of a lot of things that the Kings are. But one of the things they kick ass in is something that has been a very prevalent topic in this summer, which is fancy stats, which is possession numbers. And the Kings are possession monsters. What is your take, sir, on the fancy stat revolution? In fact, today, the news today is hockeyreference.com, which is a place, much like IMDb, a complete rabbit hole that I just get sucked down from time to time and start looking at who came in seventh in the Vezina voting back in 1994. They've added fancy stats columns to their bio pages for the players, which is really cool. Where do you stand on fancy stats, sir?
I love that this is the question of 2014. It's like, you know, it's are you a Neil Diamond fan or are you not a Neil Diamond fan? And turn into are you a fancy stats or are you not? I think, like, I'm pro fancy stats. I mean, I think that anybody, and I've heard this argument on your show a bunch of times, like, no one is saying just use the stats. No one is saying these are the only answer to it. I think anyone who is saying that doesn't know what they're doing. And I think that possession numbers are important, and it's important for these teams to have people that understand them and how to use them. I actually agree with what Drew Remenda said on your show, I think it was like last week. I think that advanced stats and analytics will be used full force with GM and player personnel moves. But I do think they have less of an impact on coaching decisions and coaching moves. And I think we can look at Matt Fratton as a King for a really good example of that, right? Like, Matt Fratton was somebody that, from what I've read, Dean Lombardi kind of specifically targeted in the Bernier trade because of his possession stats numbers, came to the Kings, was given every opportunity to be part of the top six in the first quarter of the season, and just didn't fit in either with the coach or with the system, and then – and the funniest thing ever is swapped for Marian Gaborik. So I think that the advanced stats tell a big part of the story, but they're not going to tell the whole story. And I think that you're only here. I'm sure, I don't know this by fact at all, but I'm sure the Kings have been on top of possession numbers and advanced stats for the last few years. I mean, it just, you look at the type of players they have, you look at the players they've gone after, they have to have had it on their radar. But
right.
Unlike the Oilers or Toronto, they don't need to make a big announcement that they are because they're successful. It seems that the teams that aren't successful are making this big announcement that they're moving towards it. And I think it's great. I think more information, the better. And I think there always will be room for the eyeball test. And I think there always will be room for advanced stats.
Yeah, and that's, I think your point's a good one, because I feel like some of the critics of advanced stats have sort of forwarded their agenda by saying, well, look at the Leafs and look at the Oilers. Clearly these moves are being done for public relations, and it's just lip service. But you could make a PR splash and still improve your team at the same time. Like, I don't think that these hirings are hollow. Like, I think they actually,
right.
in the Leafs case, you're not going to sit there and tell me that hiring Daryl Metcalf and buying out extra skater is for aesthetics and for optics. I mean, it's obviously a tactical move to bring a guy on who knows a thing or two about advanced stats and to buy all of that information from his site and the way he collects it. So, yeah, it does benefit the Leafs from a PR perspective to bring these guys on, and all of a sudden now the main criticism of their coach is being balanced out by having all of these people in the front office that embrace analytics. But the idea that it is simply just for optics, like what Steve Simmons has said before, is nonsense, isn't it?
It's total nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And it's why wouldn't you want – that's what I don't understand about the bravado and, like, about it. It's like, why wouldn't you want the franchise that you're either covering or cheering for to have all the information available? Why is that such a crazy concept? And I know people love to compare it to baseball, and it's like, yeah, you're not going to bring in – a left-handed batter to face a right-handed pitcher in hockey. Like, you're not going to all of a sudden make a line change because you got to get Justin Williams out on the ice to match his, you know, quality and competition Corsi to the guy who's out there right now. It's just big picture stuff. And I don't understand. I guess the backlash comes from fear. I mean, do they worry that, is it something they don't understand? And so that just our reaction as humans is to fear it and try to disparage it, because it's here to stay. And like, I look forward to the day that, like, Tyler Dello, assistant GM, is being, like, announced somewhere on Twitter, because, like, you have to think that that's the next wave in player personnel and hockey, you know, ops management.
I love Tyler, and he's a friend, but there would be a certain symmetry, wouldn't it, if he was an assistant GM one day, and then someone found his emails disparaging one of his own players and published them, and then all of a sudden we have a Colin Campbell situation for Tyler. Like, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying that it could happen is all I'm saying about Tyler. But I love the man, and I'm very happy for his success. The Royal Half, ladies and gentlemen, is a brilliant blogger, and you know, find his work on the LA Kings site, on the royalhalf.com or net? What do you got?
We're legit, man. We're .com.
All right, .com or .gov. I imagine there's probably something within Sacramento that has something to do with the Royal Half. And thank you so much for being on the show. We'll definitely have you back at some point this year when Merrick's around, if you can fit it into your busy XM schedule.
Absolutely. And I just want to let you know, to help cover the absence of Merrick on this podcast, I took copious amounts of mind-altering drugs before I came on the air. So hopefully I filled that void.
You did pretty good. You got to about 70%. You obviously lacked in references to the 1967 Sarnia Sting's second power play unit, but I mean, you did okay for yourself. Also, obscure Canadian children's television.
Oh, don't get me started about the Hollywood Stars of the old Pacific Coast Hockey League. I'll start spinning a yarn about them.
please don't. We will talk to you soon, sir. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thanks, Greg.
The Royal Half, ladies and gentlemen. And Tracy Myers, the lovely Tracy Myers, will be joining us in a few minutes to talk about the Blackhawks in this jam-packed show that got on a little bit late. By the way, we're doing it early today. I should have probably mentioned that earlier. We're doing it early today because producer Matt had some run around to do. I had to do a little traveling today, and Merrick had many meetings, so couldn't do the show. But back on Friday, which will be fun and coolness. The Royal Half is one of those sites that, you know, innovates, I think would be the word. Their graphic work is so much fun, and that a team like the Kings, and of all the teams, obviously it would be the Kings, the way they work their social media, to understand the value of that, embrace it, and not be so scared about a wild card voice being added to their website. They should be applauded for that, and that's why they're great. Tracy Myers writes about the Blackhawks for CSN Chicago, and she joins us now on the Merrick vs. Wyszynski, but no Merrick podcast. Hello, Tracy. How are you?
I am good. I heard you're going solo today, so I'm happy to join you.
Yeah, I am. Merrick is, as you may have heard, Sportsnet and Rogers got the NHL rights. And so I know that there's
that somewhere, yes.
Yeah, there's some high-level meetings on what exactly Jeffrey will be doing this year, but I think for the most part, every time that I've done the show by myself since that deal, it's been a suit fitting of some sort. I don't quite understand it. Growing up in New Jersey, I knew some people connected to the mafia, and even they didn't have enough these kinds of suit fittings that Merrick has, but right. That's neither here nor there. Tracy, cursory glance, general feelings, what do you think about the Blackhawks heading into this season?
Well, I think that they've got a great opportunity to pick up where they left off and, you know, at least get to the Western Conference Finals again, maybe get to the Cup Final. I mean, they were this close. They were so close, and it was just another incredible run for them, and coming off the Cup and short summer and, you know, everybody getting back together and picking up almost where they left off. You know, you look at what they did in the off season; they didn't have the money to do a whole lot. I think the Brad Richards signing, at least on paper, was a great idea, and hopefully it pans out, certainly money-wise and contract-wise, great idea. So, I think they're in great shape. Obviously, they still have to trim a little off the roster, get under the cap. But I think they're in great shape with their depth, with as long as a lot of these guys have been together. And, you know, now we just see what happens.
Yeah, and when you bring up Richards, I mean, what do you envision a second line for them looking like with him on the team?
I think at least to start, and we talked to Joel Quenneville about this in July, he would like to, at the very start, see Brandon Saad, him, and Patrick Kane. And I tell you what, you know, I'd like to see that myself. Now, we've been here. We've seen this before. We know what happens with Quenneville lines. They'll change every 5 minutes, but not a bad start. And with Brad Richards, I know everybody says, listen, he's not the player he was a couple years ago. He's not that fast. If he's got the vision, if he's got the ability to get to the puck to Patrick Kane, that's what you're looking at. Quenneville has said it often. We have seen it in practice that, and in games, that Patrick Kane is at his best when he's got the puck. So you don't want a center who's doing nothing but hogging it. You want a guy who is capable of getting the puck to him. And as far as I'm concerned, I think Brad Richards should be able to do that.
Yeah, he should, and facilitate that kind of speed through the neutral zone. Although I do have visions in my head of cement skates being behind the play and being like, okay, you guys just go ahead. I'll catch up. Just give me the puck when I get there, okay?
It could happen. It certainly could happen. But, you know, I'm an optimist by nature most of the time. And so we'll reserve judgment unless it comes to fruition. But, yes, you certainly hope that, you know, Richards is ready and is at the top of his game as much as he can be coming in and go from there.
The real intrigue about this team right now heading into camp, I think, is their cap situation. They're according to CapGeek, $2.2 million over the cap. They have a whopping 23 players signed right now and a lot of money committed. The sort of lazy analysis is that this means that Patrick Sharp will be moved at some point during the season. I tend to believe that they're going to take one more kick at the can with this group and keep him around for the full season. But maybe I'm wrong on that. How do you see them potentially addressing their cap situation now? And do you think that they're going to have to make more snips deeper into this payroll during the season?
Well, you know, I was kind of thinking along the same lines as you, heading into the draft, heading into free agency. I've kind of starting to wonder if it's more the chance of a defenseman being moved. One, because I think they have more depth there. You know, is it a Johnny O'Dea? I think he's at somewhere around 3.5 cap space or salary cap hit. Is it a Nick Leddy who You know, I mean, when you look back at the playoffs the last 2 years, his time on ice is diminished, and the potential is there, the ability is there. I don't know if the confidence has always been there. You know, do you move him? Does another team look at him and say, okay, you know, Will certainly has a great upswing to him. I'm starting to think it's more maybe a defenseman that is moved either before camp or during, obviously, before the regular season starts. And, yeah, during the regular season, it's possible. It depends on who they move during training camp. It depends on how much room they still have. You know, they don't want a situation, obviously won't be a purge like post-2010, but they were still up against the cap despite that purge, and guys like Letty to win the Rockford Shuffle. You don't want to put yourself in that situation. So, you know, if it comes down to that, even if they get under the cap, if they feel the need to trim a little bit more, I won't be totally surprised, but, you know, that's always the, that's just what you got to deal with the salary cap era.
Yeah, and obviously one more interesting thing about Oduya and Letty is that it depends on what teams are looking for, because Oduya goes right. UFA next summer, Letty goes RFA next summer, so if you're a team that maybe is, you know, worried about players maybe leaving on their own accord, then maybe you go get the RFA. But if you're someone who just wants a quick puck mover for one season and then don't have to get locked into anything longer term, then maybe Oduya is the better option there. So two interesting options, and I think you're right that maybe one of them moves during camp just to loosen it up a little bit. But, yeah, I think the idea – like, we all know what's coming down the pike next year insofar as the increase
right.
in salary caps hits for Kane and Taves. That's when I think you readdress the Patrick Sharp thing, or maybe even the Marian Hossa thing, is when all of a sudden those guys
right.
jump up by $3 million or $4 million, $4.2 million apiece. Jesus, those contracts, woof. one more Blackhawks-specific thing for you, Tracy Myers. Corey Crawford,
okay.
Where are you on Corey Crawford these days?
You know what? When the Blackhawks won the Cup in 2013, I thought, you know, great, because he took so much flack and they'll never win a Cup with him and all this. Great. There are times I understand why people have the concerns they do. I understand that. Was he the only problem down the stretch in the postseason? No. You know, I thought the defense was tired. I thought the defense was more hurt than they let on. So it wasn't a help. I mean, you looked at the goals that they gave up total as a team against the Kings compared to the two previous series. You know, it was alarming. I think they gave up 28 goals in seven games to the Kings. You're not going to win giving up four goals a game. So I could see why people have those concerns, and, you know, it is, I mean, even though he has a cup from 2 years ago, it is kind of a bounce back year. I mean, he still needs to stop those soft ones. There's still too many of those getting through. And what I want to see this year is, you know, okay, he came up short last year. You know, how does this motivate you during the summer? And also, now that Jimmy Wade is coming in, Stephon's brother and Corey Crawford and Stephon had a fabulous relationship on and off the ice. Jimmy has said that, all right, my brother and I are very much alike, and we approach goaltending coaching the same way, so this should work out fine. I want to see that effect too. Does it have the same effect? Was it a bit of a switch, you know, going to a different goalie coach last year? You know, was that a bit of an effect and everything? Corey would never say that, but still. I think there's... I could see why people are concerned at times. There's no doubt, you know, despite winning the cup and everything, there's still times where you think, oh, dear Lord, you know, why was that given up? He can answer himself very well, like he did against the St. Louis series. He bounced back beautifully in that, but I still think he needs to tighten up at spots. And the pressure's on. I mean, this is the start of a massive contract. And, you know, when you get numbers like that, you have to answer and you have to play up to them.
Yeah, for sure. Finally, Tracy, you can speak on this if you want to, or just say, "Hey, I've said all I want to say on it." But you were tweeting a bit about the Ray Rice thing yesterday, and I imagine you are an NFL fan, correct?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. As an NFL fan and as a woman, what do you think about their response to all this?
Well, first of all, I wish, be it Mrs. Ray Rice, be it any woman who has has had to face domestic violence. And I don't know what that's like. I have no idea what it's like to live in fear of being hit, or having been hit, trying to leave and living in fear of what if this person comes after me. So I wish everybody who has ever been through this all the health and happiness and abuse-free present and future that they can find. As far as the NFL, I thought it was an about time reaction. You know, why it took this long for it to be done. You know, it's a shame that the NFL, the Ravens, had to be backed into a corner with stuff that was, I mean, you pretty much knew that something really bad happened here. And, you know, when the video came out and everything, that it took to that point for something truly to be done. You know, I guess it's better late than never, but the message needed to be sent months ago. And, yeah. You know, be it NFL, be it anybody, you know, the average Joe who's dealing with this and domestic violence, you know, you just hope and pray that eyes are opened and that some lives are saved here.
And I guess the follow-up there is one of the more interesting things that have come out throughout this whole process, throughout this whole thing with Ray Rice, is a lot of people kind of saying, if you are someone who stands up against domestic violence, stands with women, is concerned about women's issues, that you are a gigantic honking hypocrite if you're an NFL fan. I don't have a problem reconciling it, because I think that any giant corporation is going to have some terrible elements to it. And I've made this example in the past on this podcast, and not to even make this pop oil even more, but like, as a Catholic, it's not as if my gigantic organization hasn't had completely deplorable things happen.
Right.
You understand it, and you hope that they get their heads out of their asses and deal with it appropriately. But by no means does it mean that you're walking away from it. I'm not trying to equate one religion to the other, although I guess I just did. But I guess that's – I've always been able to kind of see the bigger picture and be like, I'm not going to boycott something because I disagree with one element of it. And but where do you stand on that whole idea? Because it's been said by a lot of people beyond, say, Jezebel. It's been said by some other people as well, beyond a more extremist element here.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I was also, to switch it to religion, I was also raised Catholic and still consider myself Catholic. And certainly there have been things that have happened with the church and with the hierarchy and some of the horrible things that have happened there. And you think, my God, what are we doing? But at the same time, I belong to a wonderful church here in Chicago that sends the right message, that has the right people in power, that does the right things. I see where the anger comes from, because I believe that the NFL and the Ravens could have handled this better. But yes, does that mean that the NFL as a whole is a total monster? Does that mean that, oh, okay, boycotting football games means that something will change? I don't know. Yeah, I think you have to separate them, because sadly, you know, domestic violence does not exist just with NFL players and their spouses and significant others or anything. It's unfortunately more widespread than it needs to be. And so I think you run the risk of, lumping everybody into this villain category, if that makes sense. And I think that might be, unfair to the people who are in the NFL, who have done good things, and real men in the NFL who have never struck their significant others. So I think you have to be very careful at lumping it all together.
Well, good stuff, Tracy. I thought you had some good things to say on your feed yesterday about it, and thanks for addressing it here. I'm happy as a Jets fan that we have Chris Johnson and Chris Ivory, and that the NFL suspended Ray Rice, because when this whole thing went down, I said, Rex, you're going to do that, aren't you? You're going to go out, and you're going to hire Ray Rice to be a Jet, and I'm going to have to be a sad little boy for this.
I mean, that was the thing. That was the fear of you know, the sad part of the greed and the need to win and stuff like that is, you thought that was the first thought is, okay, who's going to be okay with taking this guy on? So, no, I'm glad that nobody will be.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Tracy Myers, ladies and gentlemen, CSN Chicago. Do follow her on Twitter. What's your handle on Twitter?
Trey Myers at CSN Chicago. Trey Myers, CSN. Oh, my God. It's been that long. It's been a long summer.
All right. Well, the summer is almost over. We're almost back in hockey time. And we will talk to you during the season. Thanks, Tracy.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Tracy Myers, ladies and gentlemen. Thought we should touch on the Ray Rice thing. It is, of course, a extraordinarily prevalent story in sports. I heard some people yesterday debating what the reaction would have been had it been a situation like that in the National Hockey League. And I don't know. It would be interesting to see what our league's reaction to it would be, whether they would be as dickish and as covert as the NFL, or whether they would understand the severity of the crime and deal with it accordingly. It's an interesting situation. I'm sure Gary Bettman and friends are pretty happy that they're not put into that situation. Real briefly, I put out a QOD, but we don't have time to really get to it. So apologies if you answered it. Stefan Quintal hired to be the new Department of Player Safety head for the NHL. It's something that had been in the works for a bit, but there were also other candidates that they were seriously looking at. Claude Loisel, one of them, who walked away from the gig, or maybe it was a mutual thing where they decided not to go in that direction. Brian Leetch walked away from his candidacy when the league was maybe looking at him. George McPhee, Chris King were in the process late. Quintal was the one that the folks within the Department of Player Safety wanted. They wanted him because he was already working within the department last season. And they kind of see it as consistency. You know, I feel like the NHL sort of agreed with the mindset that the Department of Player Safety is working, that the standards that they've set are working, that there's no need to hit the reset button in the same way we hit the reset button when Shanahan took over for Colin Campbell. All that stuff, I think, factored into maybe bringing Quintal up and drafting him for that vice president of player safety spot, and I agree with it. You know, I think that hitting the reset button for that position is a good thing at times. I don't think it's a necessity all the time, but I don't think that the department is quite yet at that point of being a tangled mess of inconsistencies that you have to wipe the slate clean. I think they've done a real good job under Shanahan. I think that overall, maybe the ratio is 4-1, the times when I nod my head in agreement versus the times I throw my hands in the air and say, what the hell are you people looking at? And that's pretty good for a supplemental discipline apparatus in any league. So happy that Quintal gets the bump, hoping that they continue down the road that Shanahan paved with the videos, with the education, with the targeting of headshots, with the targeting of repeat offenders and all of it. And so good on them for making a good call. All right. Thanks to Tracy Myers. Thanks to the Royal Half. And thanks to you for listening. Sorry about technical difficulties before in starting late. And sorry for the feed not working lickety-split during this podcast either. So, yeah. Thanks, everybody. We will talk to you on Friday. Bye.